Father, thank you for your word. Thank you in particular for this portion of your word tonight. I ask for your grace for myself. I ask for your grace for each one of our hearts and minds, and that you would, Lord, by your Spirit, open our minds, open our hearts to grasp what we're meant to grasp from this particular portion of your word. See how it's to apply to our lives, and that we would be diligent by your grace to be doers of what we learn and not hearers only. Thank you, Lord. Amen. All right, let's return to Proverbs chapter 10. We're beginning to make some good progress here. We're not quite halfway through the chapter, but we're getting close. We left off in our last Proverbs study, which was the 51st study through the verses of Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. Tonight we're picking up in verse 13, and like the other verses in this chapter, each individual verse is like a lesson unto itself, so I'm just going to cover as many verses as I can. I have four prepared for tonight, and we'll see if I can get that many done. We did three last week, but we'll see what the night holds. Let me go ahead and read those four, though, because in the way that this particular group of four verses is constructed, the first two verses, 13 and 14, are kind of like a pair that are teaching a similar lesson with different emphasis. And then verses 15 and 16 are another pair that also have a related theme. So I'll read 13 through 16. I'm just not sure that I'll get all the way through 16. We'll see how it goes. Proverbs 10:13, on the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found. But a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense. The wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool brings ruin near. A rich man's wealth is his strong city. The poverty of the poor is their ruin. The wage of the righteous leads to life, the gain of the wicked to sin. All right, I mentioned pairs of verses, and 13 and 14 are a pair in the sense that they are touching on a similar theme, and it's a theme that has already been dealt with in several verses in chapter 10, but because it's such a critical element in our spiritual life and our walk with the Lord, the Lord continues to return to this theme, and it's a theme of our mouth and the role our mouth plays in our lives and in our relationship to the Lord. In verse 13, as with all of these verses in chapter 10, what we're dealing with, remember, is the technical term. You don't have to remember the technical term, but the technical term is all of these verses contain what is called an antithetical parallelism. And what that means is simply one verse with two points in the single verse, like the two sides of one coin. In a sense, they're stating opposite principles, but they're together making one important point. So in verse 13, the contrast, the two things that are being contrasted are, in terms of what is specifically being compared, two kinds of men or two kinds of people. Okay, and the two kinds of men in this verse are man of understanding compared to what? Man lacking sense. Okay? He says, on the lips of him who has understanding, and him, at the end of verse 13, who lacks sense. So one man is a man who's characterized by understanding. The other is characterized by lacking sense. Now keep in mind, with all of these verses in Proverbs, this section of Proverbs in particular, we're not dealing with absolute statements that are true in every possible way, every possible circumstance. We have to set properly the context around the point, the principle that's being established in these verses. For instance, The goal here, obviously, is that out of these two kinds of individuals, you and I should want to be identified by this first description, right? Which would you rather be, a man of understanding, or would you rather be a man lacking sense as people look at your life? Well, of course, God's people, all of them, are intended by the Lord to become, to grow into men of understanding. We saw from the very beginning of our study in Proverbs years ago, when we first started this study, that no one, without exception, well, there's one exception in all of human history, Jesus, but other than him, there is no one that starts out life as a person of understanding. We all lack sense when we're born into this world and as we're growing up in this world. We have to gain understanding somewhere along the way. But even as someone who belongs to the Lord, and if we fit into this category, not by our own estimation or evaluation, but by the Lord's evaluation of us as he looks at us, if he looks at Steve and he says, I see in Steve, this is Jesus speaking, I see in Steve a man of understanding. If we can reach the point in our walk with him where we can properly categorize ourselves as people of understanding, we're not saying that we understand everything, every moment, in every circumstance, and that there's never a single moment in our lives where we lack sense. I have gained in 28 years of knowing the Lord and walking with the Lord so much understanding that at times when I stop and think about what I used to understand compared to what I now understand, it just staggers me, because I know it's all by the grace of God that I've gained any of that. Nevertheless, as much understanding as I've gained, I still have some shining moments of lack of sense. You know, and they're just like blips in between the rhythm of understanding things in life, where I make a choice, or I think a thought, or I speak a word, or I act in a particular way, and I look at that later and I say, what were you doing, knucklehead? Why were you acting with such a lack of sense when you should understand better about those things? So I'm not wanting us to look at this contrast and comparison and say, this is an absolute difference between these two groups. What we're really looking at is a spectrum, in a sense. And along that spectrum, if on this side it's total understanding, and on this side it's a total lack of sense, we're all somewhere between these two. But there is a tipping point. You know what I mean by a tipping point? Where I've gained enough understanding that I no longer properly, by the Lord himself, am categorized as a person lacking understanding. He looks at me and says, this is a man of understanding in general, though I have my moments and you do too. So that's the goal. That's that's what we're after. Now, how do we get from the beginning point of that spectrum, born into this world totally lacking sense, to a place where we could be realistically categorized as a person of understanding? How do we get from point A to point B? It's not just blundering your way there, because if it's blundering your way there, you're never gonna reach there. How do you get there? Gaining knowledge is good. Knowledge of what? I know a lot of intelligent people. I know a lot of intelligent people that are, you know, filled with knowledge and are totally lacking in sense. You've heard stories like Einstein, who had trouble making change for the bus. Genius, head filled with all kinds of knowledge, but lacked sense in some very basic areas of his life. And of course, that's just an example of the point, which is the understanding that Proverbs is describing here, and that we should be aspiring to and desiring greatly, is not just an accumulation of facts, about life and about the world, not just scientific information alone, but not that there's anything inherently wrong with scientific information, but that this is an understanding that is more spiritually based and oriented than simply world facts based. It's not a matter of just sitting down and memorizing Wikipedia on the internet, or getting a hard copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica set and memorizing that, and then at the end of that project saying, I've now reached man of understanding stage. Doesn't exactly work that way. The spiritual understanding, someone already mentioned, is based entirely in this concept we've talked many times before about, but Paul describes it this way, the renewal of the mind. And the renewal of the mind begins at a specific point in life. And it can't happen before this specific point first occurs. What's the beginning point? All right, the new birth or salvation is the beginning point of the renewal of the mind. Immediately following, I mean literally next breath after you are born again by this, the grace of God, redeeming your soul, saving your soul, he then begins in his next priority concern for your spiritual development. He begins the process of taking you through a mind renewal. And that's a lifelong thing. The new birth is not lifelong. It's immediate and it's singular, a point in your personal history. But once that occurs, he starts you on a process of the renewal of your mind that will take literally the rest of your life and transition on into eternity. Now, it starts at the new birth, but after the new birth and after the process starts, what really carries this forward, of course, is our relationship to God, His Word, and His church. Meaning that we first have to be in right relationship with God just to be able to understand the lessons that come with the renewal of the mind. If we're not in right relationship with God, if our hearts are in some element of rebellion against Him, then what that creates is a filter over our minds and hearts so that the lessons God is teaching us are filtered by our rebellion and we don't really have those lessons take root and produce the long-term fruit that God is after. But right relationship with God places us in a spiritual circumstance, a condition in which we're ready, willing, and able now to learn the lessons that He wants to teach us through this mind renewal process. Then, of course, our relationship to His Word is critical because that's the content of the lesson. That's the content of what He's renewing our mind to. And then our relationship with His church is also critical. We don't want to leave that element out because it's in a right relationship to His church that we gain a large part of the understanding that we're meant to gain from His Word by the teachers that God appoints in His church. And of course, the church helps to maintain our right relationship with God because it provides a healthy accountability point for each one of us. None of us left to ourselves would maintain our relationship in the way that it should be to God. That's why God places us in a family so that we can help one another to maintain that right relationship to both Him and to His Word. All right, that's the background then of what it means to become a man of understanding. And it's not an instantaneous thing. It's a progressive thing. And every single one of us is somewhere different along that spectrum that we were discussing earlier. Now, what does it say about the man of understanding in verse 13? On the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found. So I said this is really a theme of the mouth as it is found in a certain condition in the man of understanding. So the lips are connected to wisdom. Now, lips here, why lips? It's interesting how different words are chosen by the Lord to focus our attention on the point that he's teaching. Many places in Scripture, God will speak of the voice, or many places he'll speak of the mouth directly. Why do you think he's speaking of lips here in particular? Yeah, in other words, I think it's just orienting us not just to our own personal gaining of wisdom for ourselves that's kept within ourselves only for us, but that the whole idea here is on the lips of the man of understanding, wisdom is found, meaning it's as though, you know, and I'll use a woman analogy here because that would be more appropriate with this word picture or this idea. If I walk into a room and I see a group of Christian women, and let's say you all happen to be wearing a certain kind of lipstick, okay, which makes or beautifies your lips, makes your lips more attractive, right? I guess that's the reason why women wear lipstick. Help me out here, right? How many of you wear lipstick? All right. Okay. Why the lips? Now, obviously, that's connected to a certain intimacy of kissing and relationship to someone that, you know, God has brought into your life. So what we're dealing with here is an intimacy of relationship, but this one isn't a romantic relationship. This is a relationship of fellowship. And instead of lipstick, God has beautified the lips of the people of understanding with wisdom. So that as I encounter you in a fellowship circumstance, it's like it's noticeable that wisdom is on your lips, just like lipstick would be noticeable on a godly woman's lips in a different context for a different purpose. The idea here is a signal for fellowship. Now, of course, that's from godly person to godly person. One other element we should probably mention is that God places wisdom on the lips of men of understanding, not just for other men of understanding, but also to help in a redemptive way those around them who are lacking sense. Now, the people around them lacking sense won't always listen to the wisdom on the lips of the people of understanding, but at least it's offered. At least it's there. At least it's available. If any one of these people who are lacking sense, by the grace of God, has a change of heart and an inclination to desire the wisdom that they see on the lips of the godly and on the people of understanding, they can grab hold of it, they can take hold of it, they can be themselves changed by that. So, the idea is, it's obvious. That's the point of the lip imagery. That means wisdom should be obvious on the lips of the godly. Now, how is that obvious? It's simply a practical way to describe that as you're living your life as a person of understanding, there will come moments in your life where it's necessary for you to open your mouth and speak. Whether it's in a formal setting like I'm doing right now, or an informal setting of any kind out there in the world, at the grocery store, speaking to your own family, speaking to your husband or wife, speaking to someone at a workplace, speaking to someone at the gym where you're working out, speaking to someone at the gas station while you're filling up your car. It should be obvious when it's time for you to open your mouth and speak that wisdom is on your lips. Now, how would that be obvious? Because whatever comes out of your mouth at that moment is wise. As opposed to, or compared to, the alternative. And what's the alternative? Something lacking in sense coming out of your lips. So that people should be able to count on you. Now, I know, as I said earlier, we're all on a different place in the spectrum here of starting at a point of lacking understanding, lacking sense, and growing into becoming a person of understanding, characterized by understanding. But it's a wonderful thing. It's a glorious thing when people begin to count on you for understanding and for wisdom. I have people call me up all the time out of the blue. I mean, I didn't plan it, didn't schedule it, call me up out of the blue. And when they hear my voice, they expect to receive some perspective of wisdom and understanding. They expect it. Is that a bad thing? Is that pressure? Yeah, kind of, I guess it is pressure, but I don't feel any pressure when that time comes. Because if it's just me trying to figure stuff out, that's pressure. But if it's coming from a heart which has treasured up wisdom for years and years and years because of learning from God the right way to look at things, then it's no pressure. It's like someone calls me, they have a question about something, and more often than not, I mean, way more often than not, thankfully, I open my mouth and wise things come out, and it always amazes me. I'm serious. It amazes me sometimes to hear myself talk. I know it sounds conceited, but I'm not talking in that line. Just follow me. This is your story too. This is what God is after for all of your lives. The idea is that, you know, I very clearly remember being the person that no one would ever ask advice of. Very clearly remember that. 28 years ago, you would not have asked me for advice on anything. And if you had, you would have been a person lacking sense. Because I didn't know anything about anything the way I should have known it. And I was lacking in sense in every way. Now, 28 years after God, by the grace of God, filling my heart like a treasure chest full of His wisdom, now when someone comes and knocks on that lid and says, is there any wisdom in there for this particular circumstance that I'm dealing with? And some words come out of my mouth, and it doesn't mean that I always say the most wise thing, the most understanding thing. But what it does mean is I am to be characterized by not lacking sense in my response to that person, but I'm to be characterized by wisdom and understanding. And so are you. So are you. My job is to, in a sense, work myself out of a job in relationship to you. To get you to the point where you don't need to call me up because you've stored up your own measure of wisdom. And you'll have other people calling you up, right? Doesn't mean you're going to be a pastor. Doesn't mean you're going to be a teacher. But it does mean you're supposed to be a man or woman of understanding and of wisdom. And that when people see you, they see wisdom on your lips. Anything short of that is short of God's purpose for your life. It's what He's designed you for. And it's what He's working in this process of the renewal of the mind to accomplish in you. Now, there's a contrast here, of course. The contrast in this verse is, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense. Now, some of you are familiar with this, but let's just be clear, in case we're not all familiar with the cultural terminology, the historical reference here. What is meant by a rod? Okay, I've heard a few different words, but I like Ken's. I'll go with Ken's. It's a implement of discipline. And I say implement because it was an actual tool. And the rods, you know, the rods that were used changed from historical period to historical period. They're not exactly identical, you know, throughout all of history. But generally speaking, what we're talking about is a piece of wood that was in the shape of a rod, you know, a circular piece of wood. And what was that rod used for? It was used for beating people. It wasn't used for tapping them on the shoulder to get their attention politely and pleasantly. It was applied with force to the back. And when we're talking about the back, generally speaking, we're talking about this small of the back area. Generally speaking, they weren't to hit in the upper back, although sometimes, you know, certain blows would fall in the upper back, because the upper back, you know, and they understood this, is where the heart was. The goal of beating with rods was to cause serious pain, but not permanent damage to the physical body of the person being disciplined with the rod. Now, this had all kinds of different levels of application, starting in the family. We'll see in passages later on in the book of Proverbs that this same exact word is even used to describe family discipline in what we culturally now refer to as spanking. And when we get to those passages, we'll talk more specifically about that and the application of that and how in this context there's a very specific and more narrow application than there is in the wider context that this passage is referring to, which is civil discipline. Meaning, this is a discipline that was enacted by the civil government of a local town or village. When someone in that town had broken the law, and it wasn't so severe a law as to require a death penalty, but something less serious than that, but nevertheless still a serious violation of the law, that person would be brought to the governing authorities of that town or of that city. And in a public setting, they would be brought out in public, and they would be assigned in their trial a certain number of blows by the rod. And then those blows would be applied by those governing authorities to that person's back. And the typical punishment for serious offenses, again, not death penalty, were 39 blows. Because they, generally speaking, determine that if they hit someone 40 times, there's the possibility they could kill them. So they backed off one. Now, of course, that varied with each person, because 39 blows to one person might be different in its effect than 39 blows upon another person. And of course, whoever was applying the blows, you know, if they're putting a little bit more zeal into it, it might have a greater impact. But what I want us to see here, and going into this historic background serves a purpose, what this passage is talking about is not just some light thing. What's being contrasted and compared is what happens and what should be expected in the experience of the wise, understanding person versus what happens in the life and what should be expected in the life of the person that is foolish. On the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense. Meaning, the person who lacks sense will inevitably meet the rod. It's going to happen. Now, we have to find some cultural parallel here, because in our life circumstances today, when was the last time you saw someone in our town by the town governing authorities beaten with rods in the public square? Never have. I remember a few years ago, we had a case, and it was on the world news, of some young man who was in another culture. I think it was the Philippines or someplace like that. And it was Indonesia. He was caned publicly. That's beating with rods. It's the closest equivalent. But when that happened, there was outrage all over Western civilization. because this young man, who apparently, from what I could tell from reading the circumstance, apparently deserved some kind of punishment, and he was punished with actually being hit with a cane. Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'm misunderstanding about that, but from what I had read, I thought it was something more serious than gum. But anyway, one way or the other, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. Now, while we don't see this practiced in our culture and in our society, and I don't think we're heading this direction, we're heading further away from this direction. So while we won't see the physical practicalities of this worked out today, the principle hasn't changed. The idea is what the rod represents is it represents punishment and discipline applied by the majority to the one that has deserved through their lack of sense and the way they live their life with a lack of sense, has put themselves in a position where they need some kind of corrective measure to be applied to their lives by the society around them. Now, we could go off and talk, I won't, but we could go off on a tangent and talk about, well, what would that look like in our society? You know, how do we discipline criminals? How do we discipline those who lack sense and who violate the right ways of the Lord and even the right ways of the land itself? But the point is that what is being contrasted here are two kinds of individuals and the expected, inevitable life circumstances that are going to come across the path of both of these people. And what we're meant to see is that wisdom leads us into a certain kind of circumstance. If we live wise and understanding lives, we can expect to see a certain kind of situation develop in front of us. And if we live lives lacking sense, we should expect, and we would be, again, foolish and lacking sense to not expect this, that we're going to experience serious and severe consequences for our foolish thoughts, words, and actions. And of course, it's the words and the actions that are the rubber meeting the road part that actually brings forth some kind of serious consequence into our lives. Now, the idea is that we should look at those two things and say, which would you rather have? Would you rather have people expecting when they see you to receive words of wisdom and understanding from your life and enjoying in sharing those things with the people around you, the fruit and the benefit of this shared wisdom treasured up in your heart, and the beauty of that kind of development in the relationship with those people? Or would you rather be smacked with consequences because you've ignored God's right ways in various areas of your life? Because those are the two pathways. And remember, throughout Proverbs, we keep seeing this comparison of the pathway of wisdom and the pathway of foolishness. One following the ways of the Lord, the other ignoring and rebelling against the ways of the Lord. And the idea here is, this is what, as you walk on the path of wisdom, you will encounter. And this is, as you walk on the path of foolishness, you will encounter. All right, I think we'll have just enough time for the next verse, and we'll catch these as a pair, and then I'll save the next pair for our next study. Proverbs 10:14. The wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool brings ruin near. Again, the contrast is between the wise person and the foolish person, just like in this last one, just a little bit different terminology used. The more basic terms of wisdom and foolishness are being used here. And this point touches on a lot of what we just spoke about. He says, the wise lay up knowledge. Again, I made an emphasis on knowledge in our consideration of the previous verse, and I'll just emphasize that again. We're not talking about mere facts. We're talking about God's knowledge. Okay. And God's knowledge is for us made available primarily, not exclusively, primarily through His Word. Now that might sound funny for me to say not exclusively, but it shouldn't. It's primarily through His Word that God has made His knowledge available to us. He also makes His knowledge available to us in the world around us, the way He's made the world. And He even calls our attention in the Scriptures to pay attention to His creation and the lessons that He's invested in the world itself. For instance, just as one example of many, in the book of Psalms, the Lord directs us at night to lift our eyes and to look at the stars. Now, we don't see a lot of stars here in the San Fernando Valley just because of the lights of the city. But we're called to look at the stars, and for what reason? Why should we look at the stars? Why should we bother? Right. There is true spiritual knowledge invested in them just being there in the way that they're there, in the way that God made them, the way that God set them in the heavens, the fact that there is an order to them, a glory, naturally speaking, to them, a wonder that is stimulated by the observation of them. And all of those things are teaching us the true knowledge of God. Now, the difference between the knowledge of God and His Word and His creation is this. The knowledge of God invested in His creation is true knowledge. It's just limited. It's sufficient knowledge to teach us that God exists, and therefore we must be accountable to Him. It's insufficient to actually save us. So the knowledge God has invested in His creation is sufficient to make us aware of the existence and the reality and the glory and the power and the majesty and wisdom of God Himself, and that we therefore must be accountable to Him who has made all of these things. But we need the more specific and detailed revelation of His Word to actually give us sufficient knowledge to save us. But all of these things are His knowledge. So when this passage says in chapter 10, verse 14, the wise lay up knowledge, we're not talking about just laying up of mere facts. We're talking about laying up the knowledge of His Word and knowledge of God's hand in His creation. Now, laying it up is the other detail here. What does that mean? What is that referring to? Okay, store up is an excellent way to describe that. Store up. And store up like a treasure. Or in modern terminology, a bank account. I'm not asking how much, but how many of you have a savings account? Just have one. Whether you have a dollar or a million in there, doesn't matter. The idea of the bank account is what's being described here, meaning some safe and secure place, theoretically. I mean, given the recent IndyMac fiasco, but some safe and secure place where you take what is valuable to you and you remove it from the vulnerability to the rest of the world and you secure it in that safe place. And there is a sense of, as you're storing stuff into this place, a sense of accumulation. Now, it's not just accumulation. The reason why I want to use the bank account concept is there's two principles connected to a bank account and the way it's supposed to work. And I'm talking about savings account here. There's accumulation and what, for those who are financially proficient here? Okay, interest, which is what we would call a compounding factor. The way it works, the mystery of finances, is you put a dollar in your savings account, and if you're being paid interest on that dollar, you come back a year later and you don't just have a dollar. You have a dollar and change. You have more than you started with, and that's the way it's supposed to work. this idea here of laying up knowledge carries that kind of concept with it, which is our role is the accumulation of knowledge. And where are we laying it up, by the way? Our heart, and the head goes along with that. It's the gateway into the heart. But we'll emphasize the heart accumulation. So we're laying up, we're storing up, we're treasuring up God's true knowledge based in His Word and in His creation. We're storing that up in our hearts, and it's our responsibility to accumulate it. You know how this works. Sometimes we put all the emphasis on God, and rightly so in context. But there are many passages in Scripture that put emphasis on our part, our responsibility, in which God assigns us a task and makes us responsible to be diligent and disciplined and faithful to carry out that task. This is one of those. The verb is about an understood you. If we are the people of wisdom and understanding in the picture here, we're the ones treasuring up or storing up the true knowledge of God into our own hearts. I have a choice whether on any given day I'm going to crack the book open and actually make time to read it. And so do you. I have a choice whether to stop and look at God's creation with the desire and intent to learn something as I'm looking, as opposed to just, you know, breezing through my day and not giving a consideration at all. Now, our part is the accumulation. God's part, which we can't affect, but He does, is the compounding. What that means is simply this. I have over the years stored up a certain amount of exposure to the Bible by taking the time, opening the book, reading it, and thinking about it, and then reading it again, and thinking about it some more, and then reading it again, and thinking about it some more, and over and over and over and over and over and over again. But what I understand today is more than just the sum of all the verses that I've read in 28 years. There's a mysterious element here, the work of the Spirit of God, in which He's taken all of those accumulated verse exposures, and He's put them together in such a way that an understanding coalesces out of that accumulation. And I begin to see how they fit together and how it's all fitting into my life and in your lives and in His purpose and in His plan. That's the compounding part, where He's taking the elements that you've accumulated from your Bible study and from your consideration of His creation, and He's working in those elements and building an even greater understanding than you could possibly produce and accomplish for yourself. And that's the awesome and amazing part of this responsibility. So, on the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense. And the wise lay up knowledge, store it up, but the mouth of a fool brings ruin near. So our contrast, of course, is to the fool. And here we're back to the original theme of the fool's mouth. Again, the idea here in terms of emphasizing the fool's mouth, it's comparing and contrasting with the person that's laid up knowledge. And the indication in this comparison is that we lay up all this knowledge not just to enjoy it for our own benefit, but the accumulation and the compounding of the true knowledge of God is meant to eventually spill out through our mouths to the benefit of everyone else around us. Whereas the fool also has things spilling out of his mouth. But what spills out of his mouth instead brings ruin near. And we're here back again with this concept of consequence, which is one of the major themes of the whole book of Proverbs. That our words, every single word we speak in the whole of our lives, produces consequence. Whether good consequence, and there are good consequences, or bad ones. In the case of the fool, because he didn't treasure God's knowledge. And now we're dealing with a heart, because behind every mouth, it's like, and I'm a terrible artist with this kind of stuff. This is a vase, okay, or a vessel. And if the vessel, the big part down here is what contains what is supposed to be in there, that's our heart. And the mouth of the vessel is literally our mouth. So that what's in there is meant to be poured out, but it's going to come out through that spigot. Now, the idea here is that the righteous person, the wise person, the godly person, the person of understanding is treasuring up the wisdom and true knowledge of God so that as the vessel is tipped, what comes out is only knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Whereas when you tip the fool, what is going to come out is anything other than knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And the consequences are that it creates problems for the fool himself, as we saw in our previous study 2 weeks ago. It creates problems for everyone else around them, and that's an inevitable consequence. It's an inevitable result. Jesus said it this way. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So whatever is filling this vessel, when the vessel is tipped, and the tipping I'm talking about comes in everyday life. Every circumstance where it comes time for you to open your mouth and words to come out is a tipping point in which that vessel is tipped and whatever's in your heart is going to come spilling out over the edge. And if you've previously filled it and accumulated what you should have and it's been compounding in your heart, then it's only going to produce good stuff for everyone that listens. And if you've been filling it with anything and everything else, reality TV, top 40 radio, internet, gossip pages, you know, on and on and on. I can just name 1,000,000,000, examples. Filling our hearts with all of that junk, then when those moments come and the vessel's tipped, what's going to come out are things that we wish that we could take back after they've come out, but there's no taking them back because consequences are inevitable. And in this case, the warning is the consequences can be so severe that it brings a person's life near ruin itself. All right, we'll stop there for tonight. And we'll pick up, Lord willing, next Wednesday night at 7 p.m. with Proverbs chapter 10, verses 15 and 16 with our next pair of verses. And just as a practical note, we had been doing the final Friday of each month as an open study. That will now transform to final Wednesday will be our of each month will be our open study night. All right? God bless everyone.